Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello and welcome to another edition of ESPN Scrum Reset. I am your host, Brittany Mitchell, once again in the absence of Sam Bruce, who is over in the States. I believe he is probably on the flight back home right now, but I am once again joined by rugby journalist Christy Doran. Christy, how are you going? You obviously didn't get swept away in the Sydney floods over the weekend.
Jeez, it just keeps raining, doesn't it? And it doesn't look like it's stopping anytime soon. So shout out to all those playing club rugby across the east coast of Australia, particularly around Sydney at the moment. But we saw the conditions in Tonga over the weekend. And if the professionals can do it, if they can get wet and dirty there, I think the players across Sydney can as well. But no, I'm fine. I'm rugged up. Cold. It's getting cold. It's kind of rugby conditions, isn't it?
Yeah, it's definitely rugby season when you wake up in the morning and you've got to put, I'm wearing my Gordon rugby jumper right now. I didn't get the chance to wear it over the weekend. My sevens tournament was cancelled, which I'm a little upset about, but at the same time didn't drown. So I'm happy about that. Plenty of time to sit on the couch and watch plenty of rugby over the weekend. And we were treated to a festival of rugby through Super Rugby, of course, like usual. And then Singapore Sevens as well, where the Australian women just went down to the Black Ferns in the final and the Aussie men just couldn't get the job done in the end. And I believe they finished, where did they end up in the end?
Yeah, finished fourth in the end, where they got beaten by New Zealand in the semis and then they got handsomely beaten in the bronze medal match against Great Britain. So, but nonetheless, really good performance, given that they were missing both their playmakers, Morris Longbottom and Matthew Gonzalez, and considering all the players that were missing in the Tim Walsh's women's side as well to make the final and then actually be really competitive up 14-12 at halftime before going down after Maddie Ashby's injury. Like that's a really good result, tested the depth. So we can talk a bit more about that later on. But yeah, it was a great weekend of rugby.
Yeah, plenty to be, I guess, some stuff within Australian rugby to be happy about. Queensland Reds got up in Christchurch, a 25-year drought finally come to an end. I did make note in my column yesterday that there were some players in that team who were in nappy, some that were just a twinkle in the eye at that time, the last time the Reds managed to get up in Christchurch. So some good things at Brumbies, the Brumbies got up as well in Canberra, which was good to see. It was a tough match for them. They were tested mightily, especially at scrum time by the Fijian Drua. And then just the Waratahs, Rebels, and the Force, just they did not really put it to their opposition. But why don't we kick it off with the Reds, because that was the match of the round in the end. It was a seesawing affair, and it came. They were all the scores were all level at one stage until Harry Wilson got that charge down and try, and then a few minutes later, Tim Ryan crossed over for his second of the night, and the Reds got up. What did you make of that match, Christy? I was very impressed with what I saw, to be honest.
Oh, it's a heck of a win, 25 years. So, yeah, Tim Ryan, who's only a 20-year-old, he was still 5 years away from being born at that point in time. So it goes to show what a drought it's been. And the day that the Bledisloe Cup is won back or the Wallabies beat the All Blacks at Eden Park, there'll be all sorts of records that'll be broken. But nice to have that one. And you think about it, actually, there's been a few. You know, the Brumbies' first win in Dunedin in 10 years, the Force beating the Crusaders themselves at home. So some nice little milestones being ticked off along the way. But to talk about the Reds specifically, awesome victory. It means it's the third win against out of five matches against New Zealand opposition this year. And more importantly, they've gone from having deficits, being in the negative over matches for five matches, six matches over the last 3 years of around between 70 and 80 over those 3 years to being plus 30 in 2024, having played all five New Zealand opponents this year. So it goes to show that there's consistency being built. And we saw that against the Crusaders. Like, this Crusaders side is nowhere near what it was over the last couple of years, but you still have to go to Christchurch and you still have to beat them. You still have to, after leading a 21 points to, I think it was 21-8 lead at one point in time, slip, then to get it to 21-all. It just went to show, it goes to show the mental fortitude of the Reds. They kept coming. They didn't decide, you know, we're going to try to bank a three-pointer here to go to 24-21, but they went to the corner. It didn't necessarily work the first or the second time, but when David Havili gets charged down by Harry Wilson, there was a big match play by a big match player who we're going to be talking, and we always talk about Harry Wilson, but more and more, because that's the sort of play that gets you into test footy, in the test footy arena, I think. And then we just see the class of Tim Ryan to be able to finish off that second try. His first try was superb. Probably one of the Reds' best tries of the year, early in the first half, midway through that first half, where it went through several pairs of hands. And it just showed the progression of this Reds side, particularly someone like Mac Reilly, who had the opportunity to give the ball early to Tim Ryan, but delayed the pass and then managed to send him away into score. That was a huge progression from a year ago when the Reds managed to make all these line breaks, but they would never be able to finish them off. Here was the growth and maturity of this side. And then just lastly, the thing that really stood out to me was once again, the work rate of the Reds' forwards. 20 tackles from Ryan Smith, Liam Wright, Harry Wilson had 15, Fraser McBride had 20, Matt Fesler had 19 as well. So it was a really big collective effort there from the Reds. And Les Kiss will be ecstatic with that, having let a game slip through their fingers against the Blues just a week earlier.
Yeah, and as you said, the game plan at the start, they were kicking in behind quite a lot, and you could tell that was they'd spotted something in the preparation for that game, that there was space behind there that they could exploit. It didn't come off at the start a few times, but you could see them as they came away from it, and then they brought it back in later in the game and they exploited the defense really well back into the game, and how they held their nerve. Especially because towards the end of the game, you could see there was those moments where you were thinking, man, we've been here before. We've seen what happens. Yeah. And it had happened a week earlier, and they held their nerve. And like you said, Fraser McWright, geez, for him to come back from his suspension and he stepped up like straight away, his presence on the park was huge. Him just over the ball, he made so many steals as well. It's as you said, it was a whole round game from that team. It was probably their most put together performance, at least in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it was really good of you to highlight that Shorten kicking game early on from the Reds, because I was a bit surprised hearing the commentators almost criticise the Reds' tactics there. And they were questioning why they were kicking the ball away, or once or twice they managed to turn to get line outs or a drop kick restart. And sometimes if you kick away ball aimlessly, you can question that. But all of those were attacking kicks, which were almost 50-50 scenarios in terms of the attacking player running onto the ball. And that allows the defense to start questioning whether or not they're going to kick or if they're going to run the ball. And we saw them start to run the ball more and more as the game went on, which is when I think you often should be doing it as well. You don't want to be running the ball out of your own 22 necessarily in the opening 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes of the game. So I thought the tactics were spot on. Lawson Crichton's first, I think his best game by a country mile. He's had a lot of opportunities, particularly off the bench or occasionally at inside centre when he might have started. But that was just by far his best game. Controlled the tempo. Kicking game was on point. Combined nicely with Jock Campbell. And for a guy that's come under fire with his kicking at times, not being able to finish off the job off the second half, and we've seen that happen a couple of times this year against the Brumbies as well. Really impressive, big step forward for him, and that just gives the Reds, the entire depth and the coaching management, just confidence that there's there's not just a 15 out there, that there's a there's an entire squad of players that you can call upon at any point in time. So fair play to them. Fair play to the front row for standing up against George Power and Fletcher Neal, who was immense in the game for the Crusaders, probably their best player. But for Jeffrey Tumunga Allen to score a try, hold his own. We saw Penny Rabbi drop a couple of balls, but he was quality too. Really impressive game from the Reds.
Yeah, definitely. And they sit fifth on the table now, and the run into the playoffs include the Rebels, Drua, Force and Tars. And I don't want to be that person who makes bold statements, but you would have to think Rebels and Melbourne will be a tough task. But the way the Rebels have looked the last few weeks, you'd think it would go the rate of the Reds, but that one's up in the air. The Drua away in Fiji, that's always going to be a tough task. But Force and Tars to finish off the season, you would suspect those, given what we've seen from the Tars and the Force the last few weeks, you would suspect those are wins in the bag.
Yeah, I think they get 3 out of 4 here. Yeah, the Rebels at home this weekend on Friday night. It's something that they're going to have to – it won't be necessarily easy, as you pointed out, because the games that they've let slip through their fingers have been games that you would have thought that they would have won, like Moana Pacifica, like the Force away. The games that, yeah, you would have expected them to put away, they haven't. And the games that you thought, oh, maybe this goes the opponents, they've actually managed to play their best sort of footy. But you're right, the Reds in Fiji a week later is going to be really, really tough. That was the game that meant that they lost that last year. It allowed the Drua to scrape into the finals. But that'll be on Saturday afternoon in La Toka. That's a really tough one. Actually, no, sorry, that's at HFCP Bank Stadium. So Suva, in fact. But yeah, if they can get 3 out of 4 wins there, away from home to finish the season in Sydney against the Waratahs, that allows them momentum and a sneaky chance of fourth. If they can put this match away, that's what they'll be aiming for. And that's a huge feather in the cap. It's a money spinner. That's the sort of game that you can get 20, 25,000 people in for a quarterfinal if they potentially get 3 to 4 wins, probably more likely needed 4 wins.
Yeah, and it would be not just for the Reds, but for Australian rugby to have potentially 2 teams in the top 4 if the Brumbies remain in their position in third. It would be just a feather in the cap for Australian rugby at the moment, given the fact that we've got 3 in the top 8 at the moment. The Waratahs and Force, you could almost just rule them out at this stage, especially given the recent injury blows to the Waratahs. But going back to this Reds Crusaders match, the talking point going in regards to the Crusaders was the move for David Havili to go to number 10, which was something that All Blacks coach Scott Robertson had been pushing for some time. While I was watching, I didn't think he had a bad game. Yes, there was that charge down from Harry Wilson. There was one or two, you know, just off passes, but relatively strong performance. I wouldn't say he, you know, kicked it out of the ballpark or anything like that. He wasn't, you know, anything fantastic, but he was solid. But what do you make of that? But especially, what do you make of Scott Robinson and his messaging to the wider New Zealand playing group, that, you know, the likes of Damien McKenzie, Stephen Perifetta, your 10s that are playing in Super Rugby, the messaging from Scott Robinson from the time that he got named All Blacks coach was that he wanted to expand eligibility, especially around Richie Mo'unga. If you're a playmaker in Super Rugby, what do you take away from that? And especially now that Havili has stepped up into that number 10 role.
Yeah, it's a good question, and only probably Scott Robinson will know at the moment, but I actually have no issues in it whatsoever that he wanted him to play at 10, because I think the Crusaders at the moment need him at 10. And they're struggling big time. Ryan Crotty's the other guy that could jump into 10 if necessary, but I think he missed the week because of concussion perhaps. But they need an experienced head that knows how to lead a side around the park. They've spent a lot of time, those two guys that I just mentioned, at inside centre, second five in New Zealand rugby terms. They've moved into first five on this occasion. And the Crusaders probably played some of their best footy on the weekend. And I just think that if Callan Grace If the TMO doesn't interject, it was in the 9th minute. A beautiful ball from David Havili. He cuts out 5 Reds defenders with a bullet right to left pass. It was probably the best pass of the game. He sends Carlin Grace in to score, but the TMO, after about a minute, interjects and says there's been a knock on, and it was revealed that Scott Barrett had dropped it going to ground. And I thought that was a big kind of early turning point, because the Reds very quickly jump out of the blocks and get to a 14-0 themselves. So it was almost like a 21-point swing. And for a side lacking confidence, they needed that one early on. If the Crusaders win that game, we're not talking about David Havili and whether or not he should have been at 10 or not. I think for the Crusaders going forward, they need him at 10. I think also Scott Robinson's going, well, David Havili is probably going to be in my All Blacks mix. To have another option at 10 is not a bad idea. I don't think he'd be a first-choice 10 for the All Blacks by any stretch of the imagination. I'd imagine that Damien McKenzie will be first-choice at the moment, but Beauden Barrett will be coming back, I imagine, for the mid-year test against England. I'm pretty sure he's eligible. We know that he's signed for next year, so he's definitely coming back, so he's eligible. It's just whether or not he's healthy, fit, and can come back himself. What does it say, though, around the 10 stocks in New Zealand at the moment? They're definitely not as strong as they were. Yeah, we know that. And we know that because Richie Mwanga, best player in Super Rugby history, winning a Super Rugby title 7 years straight. He's not there. He's not going to be eligible. He's most likely not going to be playing for the All Blacks ever again, perhaps for the Pacific Islands side that he's associated with. And that's his background. So I think that, yes, it probably doesn't fill Scott Robinson with a huge amount of confidence. I think it's about just making sure you get some options there. And if this was in Ireland, players get sent to other provinces to play and wear the number 10 jersey. We've seen that before. It probably actually needs to happen more in Australian rugby, where the head coach of the national team, if he's thinking about that player from an international perspective and needs him to get more game time in that spot, they probably need to have more say. So don't mind it at all. The pressure's on Damien McKenzie to show that he can lead this Chiefs side, not to a Super Rugby semi-final or a final, but lead them to victory, because it's titles that matter, really.
Yeah, definitely. And after that game, there was also Scott Barrett injury, which, you know, is to the Crusaders. They've waited pretty much a whole season for him to come back. He had a standout performance in his first game, his return a week earlier. The Crusaders got the win. Their line out finally, you know, seemed to be on point. And we saw it early in the first, 10, 15 minutes that he was on the park. They had some direction, especially in the forward pack. And then he's gone off with some back spasms. And the latest is that there's no timeline for his return, which is a big blow for a team that was seemingly turning the corner and was on their way to, you know, opening the door to a playoff position. They're now sitting 10th. Their run into the playoffs is made harder, though. They've got the Highlanders away, Brumbies in Canberra, the Blues, and then Moana at home to finish off the season. Looking at that lineup, there's the Brumbies and Blues are just going to be two massive fixtures for them, and I don't see them really coming away with. You could probably come away with a bonus point, but a win it may be difficult.
Yeah, well, they've got to beat the Highlanders this weekend. It's as simple as that, I think. If they don't beat the Highlanders, I can't see them going to Canberra to beat the Brumbies at the moment. And then the Blues, they're a juggernaut at the moment. They're a test ready side. But if they beat the Highlanders this weekend in Dunedin, they would go closer to them. They're on 13 points at the moment. The Highlanders are on 19, so a 6-point gap. They need to ensure that they close that, because you can see the draw getting one or two wins. And then they really, I think it will come down to that last fixture. It'll be neck and neck right the way through there. The Highlanders are also hosting the Fiji and Drua in a couple of weeks themselves before taking on the Hurricanes to finish it. So it's an exciting last couple of weeks. And I know that there's a lot of people that criticise these 8-team playoffs, given that there's only 12 teams in the competition, but it actually does allow for a bit more of a exciting finish as to whether or not, you know, you're going to be able to finish in that seventh or eighth spot. We can see very clearly the top five teams of the competition are head and shoulders above the rest in terms of consistency. But yeah, it's a big game for the Crusaders, and we wouldn't have been expecting this at the start of the year. They'll be hoping for people like Will Jordan to be able to come back sooner rather than later. But Lee Halfpenny made his debut on the weekend. Probably doesn't quite have the pace he once did, and he's kicking. He missed that first shot at goals, a penalty. Fortunately, he managed to nail the second one, a conversion after Dallas McLeod crossed over, left a tricky kind of kick about 15 metres in from the touchline. But there's some experience starting to come back, but Scott Barrett, huge one, and whether or not he makes some plays this weekend, that's a big one, and they would be desperate to have him on the field.
Well, if we move on to what was a trickier match than I guess some people would have anticipated, the Brumbies in Canberra against the Drua, they came out to a firing start, 14-0 up, Lenny Kitau scoring just an amazing try off the back of Te Mari Tua. You thought it was almost home and hosed at that moment. I know it was only, first 15, 20 minutes into the match. You can't expect that 14-0 is going to be enough. But after looking at how clinical and how clean they looked in those first few minutes, they fell away very quickly. And the Drua really stepped up. Their forwards, it's not something that a lot of people talk about in the Drua's game, but the forward pack absolutely muscled the Brumbies. When you've got a Wallabies front row and you're getting completely demolished by the Drua, it's pretty impressive from the Drua, but also questionable from the Brumbies. That would have Joe Smith's attention, no doubt. But also one of the talking points was just the amount of penalties that the Brumbies gave away, which it happens when you're under pressure, but I think it was 13 penalties in a row that they handed out, and they still got the win, which is impressive in its own right. But surely you've got to kind of come away from that and question just that horrible discipline. And we saw it all night from the Australian teams. The Reds handed out, I think it was 14 penalties in their win. The Force gave away 12 penalties when they were absolutely smashed. Is there a disciplinary issue in regards to Australian teams?
I think it goes to show, yeah, if you're under pressure, you give away penalties. So it's no surprise that the Force gave away a lot. The scrum was under pressure for the Brumbies, which means that there's already three or four penalties there. But they lost the contact zone and the collisions there. And it's something that Dave Rennie used to always talk about, is winning the contact zone. And they seldom did they do that, because they were often on the wrong side of the penalty count themselves. It is concerning, the scrum issues, and it's concerning for a few reasons, because no Angus Bell, we know he's injured for a while. He's made his way back. He's doing some rehab at the moment at the Waratahs, but he's not going to be right for these July tests. The Reds have got their starting pair at the moment on the weekend with Jeffrey Tamonga, Allen, Samoan, All Black turns Samoan, Penny Ravi, Fijian. So that's two of your starting props from one of your best performing teams that's not available from a test perspective for the Wallabies under Joe Schmidt. The Brumbies, you expect that James Slimmer and Alan Alatoa will form two of the four props and probably two of the starting props under Joe Schmidt in July. And for them to get really dealt a number by the Fijians is totally concerning, because those guys are going to be wearing the number one and three jerseys probably come July. It also shows the importance, I think, of having a heavier second rower. We saw a week earlier the Rebels got smashed at the set piece, and no Lukan Salakai-Loto, who's that extra bit of weight. And I don't think you'd have too many people that would say that Nick Frost and Tom Hooper are the heaviest locks going around. They're certainly not. Some people don't even think that Tom Hooper's a lock. He's more of a six. So there is questions there. Stephen Larkin would be totally cognizant of that and aware of it. But with no Blake Shop at the moment, it is stretching them a little bit. Harry Vella, pretty young into his Super Rugby career. He's only played five or six matches himself. So Yeah, if they're going to go deep into this competition in that scenario, they're absolutely going to have to fix. But also is their consistency and their physicality, because we saw that they brought that against the Hurricanes and then they took a step back against the Drua. You were right, though, to point out the fact that the Drua and Fijian rugby set pieces and particularly their scrummaging has been perhaps their biggest area of improvement over the last few years. And we saw that the Fijians did really well against the Wallabies last year at the scrum battle. They beat England as well at Twickenham in the lead up to the World Cup. And that comes off the back of a solid foundation. So no longer is it a given that you're going to beat a Fijian side at the set piece. So it was nice to highlight that one, I reckon.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Yeah, it was a good match in the end, and the Brumbies did come out on top. I think Lenny Ikitau just really stood up in that match again alongside his centre partner in Tamati Tua. The back line was solid and they did play a pretty decent game. It was just, as you mentioned, up front, if you don't have a solid platform up front, it just makes everything immensely harder. But if you look ahead for their run into the playoffs, so you've got the Tars this week in Sydney, which is always, Tar Week is always a big week. And especially for the guys down in Brumby territory, down in Canberra, this is a big week and they'll be pumped for this one. And you'll expect they'll come in just ready to go. And the forward pack, especially, they'll want to make a statement here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we saw 25,000 people there last year for the opening, the season opener. I can't imagine that there'll be half that number this weekend, but it is a big game, one that you generally circle in the diaries of Australian rugby matches to watch. Another guy that we should highlight, Luke Reimer, immense impact off the bench, great on baller. He's a guy that's a Sydney sider that went down and got an opportunity there, probably spotted by Laurie Fisher and Dan McKellar when he came down after high school. But he had two breakdown turnovers and then a try to, and that was that 5 minutes, that 6 minute period where he managed to do that was absolutely the turning point of the game. So even given the back row stocks of the Brumbies, that's an area of strength of theirs. If Charlie Cale returns, does it see someone like we know that Rory Scott played and wore the number 7 jersey on the weekend, is a Luke Reimer even feature? So there is competitiveness in that Brumbies team, which will mean that they're challenging for spots, and the Waratahs are just trying to find anyone to fill their pack at the moment because the injury toll continues to get larger. We know that Izzy Parisi, Lalafekai Fegedi, they've got fitness tests throughout the week to determine whether or not they're going to be fit to take the park. Ned Hannigan, Jed Holloway likely to return, but no Julian Heaven. It's another blow to their hooking stocks. It means that their first four choice hookers are all out for the remainder of the season. Max Jorgensen won't be featuring. He had a hamstring injury in the 43rd minute in a game for Randwick when he was rotated out of the side, much like Dylan Peach and Mark Noong and Eduasi and Tristan Riley had in the 3 weeks prior to that. So, yeah, Darren Coleman, he can't catch a break at the moment, can he?
No, it's going to be a tough outing for the Waratahs. You look at the list and just the fact that you're so far down into your hooker stocks, and he made comments the other day about how, you know, he finally got over the last few weeks, finally got Julian Heaven around, all the calls around, you know, it takes a long time if you're a hooker, especially if you've only just come in over the preseason, not expecting to play much of a role through the year, and suddenly you're the starting hooker and you're throwing the line out ball, you have to get around the systems and everything. And he's saying, you know, it's taken weeks and weeks to get him efficient, to get him in this role at Super Rugby level, and suddenly you're back to square one. You're pulling up guys from Shoot Shield level, not just in the hooker stocks, but you know, you're looking at the same thing around their props as well. It's it's a nightmare scenario, realistically. No coach would ever want to go through this. And it made even worse, essentially. DC's job has been on the line since the start of the season. He needed a strong performance from his team throughout the year to keep his job. Realistically, that's done. And it's just,
yeah.
It's hard on a coach who's trying to keep his job, trying to get make an impression with his team, and suddenly you don't have the players around you to do it.
No, totally, and it's probably a factor. It will be a factor when they make the eventual decision on whether or not Darren Coleman's going to be around. I actually think this is the game, because 41-12, they got smashed by the Hurricanes last week, who just completely won the battle up front, the physicality battle. They were offloading at will, the Hurricanes, and the early scrum, the scrum in the second or third minute, that was the moment where the Tars just clearly weren't there at the gate. They missed it. They got smoked off the ball by the Hurricanes front row, and they scored a moment later through Billy Proctor. And that, to me, because they managed to scrum reasonably well for the rest of the match, it was just an indicator that mentally they weren't ready for the start of that game, and to suffer such a big defeat away from home wasn't surprising, but it was probably the manner of it in the first half. They need to respond against the Brumbies this week. They're down. They're missing a dozen players or so, but this is the sort of game that can make or break. And if they manage to get up and beat the Brumbies, it gives Darren Coleman a tiny bit of hope, not just to make the finals this year, but it allows punters to go, you know what? They've got fight about them. I want to come watch this side, because even though they've been smoked with injuries, they turn up, they deliver, and they've been pretty good at home to date this year. They're going to have to go to another level to come away with the win here. And I think potentially make or break Darren Coleman's career right here this weekend, because if they lose this weekend, pretty much put a line through them. Mathematically, there'll still be a tiny chance of making it through, but I wouldn't think that would occur. So, yeah, I think it's a huge one. You can't afford to have 12,000, 13,000 rock up again for a Brumbies week and then lose and put through a performance like what they might have done last week. So it's a big one, and they'll be able to clearly show that from 25,000 to 12,000, if it drops below that, you've lost the public, and it's a long way back, particularly when you've got guys like Ned Hannigan, Lockie Swinton, others like Mazesi Tupolodu and Harry Wilson, who have been efficiently confirmed like they're going overseas. There's too many players leaving the club to think that there's going to be a sudden change of form next year. So it's a massive game this weekend.
And like you were right, there's been passages through this season where they have looked great. You know, they've produced some really good rugby. And at home, like you said, when they played the likes of the Highlanders, a game that they should have put away, you know, they had the Blues within 3 points. Those games that could have easily just have been wins at home, they came down to penalties in the end, which is unfortunate. And they've been able to produce some very enterprising rugby. It's just a lack of consistency realistically in the end, and that comes down to unfortunate injuries, especially in your forward pack. If you don't have a solid forward pack, and we've mentioned it already, if you don't have that solid platform at the front, it makes it infinitely harder to get the job done. And it was interesting, we made note last week, I put it to you that perhaps it's time that Will Harrison gets a go at the number 10 jersey. He was handed the jersey last week. I don't think he had a particularly bad game. I don't think he had a particularly good game either. And it was almost a flip of the coin. We'd seen it previously, Tane Edbed in that same situation, starting at 10. Good game, not bad. Will Harrison comes on and suddenly there's just a bit of dynamicism in the back line. Things start sparking up, which is exactly what happened on the weekend. Tane Edbed comes on and a minute later he's throwing this beautiful ball and they scored their first try of the match. I don't know if it's like you mentioned, they just weren't in it at the start. Were they just not mentally prepared for this game?
Yeah, it was a good shout last week. And yeah, you were on it first by proposing that, is this the weekend that Will Harrison gets a shot? I said later in the week, well before the game was played, I found out on Tuesday night that he was playing, and I just thought, this isn't the week to give it to Will Harrison. He's not going to come away looking any better And probably all it does is hurt his confidence in his first starting game back. They were just under the pump, and there's very little a 10 can do. We saw 10 Carter struggle when the All Blacks or the Crusaders were beaten, and that wasn't very often. But when they were beaten, it was because they didn't get front foot ball and they lost the forward battle. And we saw that on the weekend with Will Harrison. So, yeah, it was never going to be a great, pretty game for him. You imagine that Tane Edwin probably comes back this weekend, but I really wouldn't mind seeing Will Harrison get another opportunity there. I just think it's a wasted exercise otherwise than to have one guy come in for 50 minutes for a really difficult match against the Hurricanes away and then go straight back to the bench. So we'll see. There's going to be obviously some tinkering there with all the injuries and the players under the injury clouds at the moment. But hopefully, more than anything, it's an exciting game. It's the Saturday evening match, so it's on free-to-air television too. So important that the Waratahs show up.
Yeah, definitely. And the other a match of last weekend that just wasn't a great showing from the Australian sides was the Rebels against the Blues. And in the end, the Rebels held tough. Like, realistically, the score at about halfway through the game, 60 minutes into the game, it looked like the Rebels could really put it to the Blues, but just got overrun in the end. What was your takeaway from that match, realistically? The Rebels are still in the hunt. They're six at the moment. They've been blown out of the park a few times, but they've also, like the Tars, shown some really good good rugby. Is it a case of just everything off the field is starting to catch up? Kevin Foote has made comments, especially given on Friday there was the no confidence
the docker
vote.
Yeah.
And everything that's been going off field, is it just the fact that things are starting to catch up?
I think so, but it's also just the love, like the draw, the way that the draw panned out. There was a series of games that the Rebels had a chance to win, and they won them. And we're seeing now against the tougher opponents, they're just not quite in that same bracket of contenders. And that you know, they maybe they would have been had they still had a Lucan Salakai Loto or some of their backs been able to stay on the field for a bit more. Guys like Matt Proctor barely sided this year, and they've come back and they've got injured, and that just hurts your continuity and your ability to form combinations. But we've seen, yeah, the last 2 weeks they get well beaten by the Blues, beaten by the Crusaders, and yeah, they put away three sides that they should have, but it's going to be a challenge for them, I still think, to make the finals. They probably need 1 to 2 bonus points in this next month. Really important that they do that. It's a big weekend, I think, for Carter Gordon. We know that the news, it had been bubbling away. It was very much on the cards that Carter Gordon was sussing out his options, not particularly thrilled with the top-up offer that he'd been that he'd received from Rugby Australia. Thought he was worth more. And you've got to put this in the context that Max Jorgensen's on more than $500,000 a year going forward. Players that have played for the Wallabies, who have been regular players, who are wearing important positions and jerseys like the number 10, naturally think, hang on, if this guy's getting that much, I should be at least close, or I should have be incentivized to have top-ups and bonuses if I meet particular areas, 25 tests, 30 tests, 35 tests, because that shows that you're very much an important player in Australian rugby. And he's been linked to rugby league. Those links are genuine, and they didn't want it going out into the media. I think it was leaked probably by the Gold Coast Titans that it was being sussed out, a move to rugby league. That's still very much on the cards, but also know the Waratahs and the Reds are very much interested in Carter Gordon. It's just whether or not financially it's all going to work for everyone to be happy. So big weekend for him against the Reds, because we know that the Reds are probably the pretty new thing at the moment under Les Kiss. It seems completely obvious that the Rebels won't be here from 2025, despite the fact that they had that little success, that little win with the Docker getting passed. But how it's been explained to me is that two different things between having that and who's got to pay the money back and actually having their license given back to them so that they can play Super Rugby next year. So I can't see the Rebels being around beyond 2024, and that means that players are definitely working out their future, whether or not they want to stay in Australia, go overseas, or switch codes. So lots going on in that space, and that's why this weekend against the Reds is really, really important.
Yeah, and it's also there's just the heartbreaking aspect of off field. There's people within the Rebels organization that aren't players, that, you know, their livelihood is on the line here. What's their future? They're living, got a mortgage, they've got kids, things like that. It's a pretty terrible situation to be in at the moment, and your heart kind of goes out to these people that a lot of the time they kind of get forgotten. A lot of the focus is on where do these players go next. I think we do forget the personal side off the pitch as well, unfortunately. But the Carter Gordon issue that you've brought up here is, has he done enough this season, do you think, for a Wallabies call up? Is he the Wallabies number 10 going forward? We saw at the World Cup, he was under immense pressure. He ended up, getting substituted, brought off onto the bench, things like that. This year, he has had his strong moments. Unfortunately, I think for me, what's really stood out is his kicking game. A lot of mistakes, not just with the tee, but, kickoffs, just not going the 10 or going out on the full, missing touch, things like that. That's one of the key indicators for me that kind of sticks in my mind. And it feels like once he feels pressure, and those mistakes kind of start slinking into his game once the pressure is on. For you, do you feel like he's someone you can rely on if you put in that playmaker role for the Wallabies?
Yeah, I think we saw last year, without having the kicking duties for the Rebels, he was probably a bit more open, and we weren't questioning him as much because he didn't have that responsibility. It's like that blissful ignorance of whether or not the guy can kick or not. And since he's taken on the kicking duties, it's put more pressure. He's been on the spotlight more. And, people like Stephen Larkham in the past weren't goal kickers. They had other people around them like Elton Flatley or Matt Burke that were kicking goals. And so it just allowed Larkham to do what he needs to do, and that's steer the team around. I feel like, generally speaking, if you can goal kick, it's probably a bonus, a feather in your cap. But unfortunately, it's going the other way for Carter Gordon this year. And it's highlighting the importance of someone like a Noah Lolesio, who's just kicking incredibly well. And he did that once again against the Drua on the weekend. Other people that we've gone, Ben Donaldson kicking less than 70%. That doesn't help his Wallaby ambitions at all. So to answer your question, is Carter Gordon the number one 10 for me at the moment? I think he probably is at the moment, maybe the best 10 in Australia. But if you're not taking a goal kicker elsewhere, playing him elsewhere, I don't think you can pick Carter Gordon at the moment to wear that 10 jersey, because kicking around that 65-70% mark is just not good enough. And even one of his first kicks on the weekend, it was a messy old kick that went over, but it was more like a soccer player going for the top right corner rather than trying to get it 15, 20 metres up in the air and not having that nice, clean, swift strike of the ball. So, yeah, I think Noah Lolesio is definitely around there. I think Tom Lyon, he didn't play on the weekend. Lawson Crichton, as we said already, stepped up really well. But I imagine those sorts of three guys will be in the conversation. Tane Edmund, another really good touch on the weekend. He's a goal kicker too. So there's options. Donaldson will probably be there, thereabouts in a squad, but I just don't know. I think he's more of a utility player at the moment than a starting out and out 10. But yeah, I think Lolesio just at the moment. But it's a really important, interesting question, because no one's commanding that jersey. And maybe we can understand that because they're 23 and 24-year-olds. And they're still very much in the infancy of their career, even though that they're 3-4 years down the track. If you're the All Blacks, Richie Mo'unga is making his debut around now. He's not got 20 tests behind him and struggled. He's built years and years behind him for not only Canterbury, but then the Crusaders. So yeah, we're probably a little bit harsh on the 10s, but they're so important in the overall picture going forward for Australia.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You bring up the likes of Richie Mo'unga, who everyone, the Lords and things like Dan Carter, but you often forget that they're behind forward packs that have absolutely dominated. And we've mentioned it several times in this podcast alone, but once you're behind a forward pack that's getting that front football, that's setting, that's getting that good setup, it makes life so much easier. And if you're a Carter Gordon, whose forward pack has struggled this year, if you're a Tane Edmed, whose forward pack has just struggled, Ben Donaldson, the same kind of thing, that's what's going to happen. It just, there's only so much you can do at the end. And like you said, Carter Gordon is probably still, you know, a number one choice at the moment, but just a lack of kicking just does really hurt your chances. And Noah Lolaseo has been very impressive this year, and it kind of brings back to last year how it was almost unfair the way he was kind of pushed aside, the work that he'd put into. And it's a fair decision in the end. If you think one playmaker is a fly half is better than the other, you've got to make that call. And I think that it kind of gave Noah a bit of a, you know,
I think it was a wake-up call. Yeah, it was a wake-up call. Yeah,
he's stepped up this year and been very impressive. It's just going to be a matter of who can handle the pressure. It's a hard role, especially at a young age. And like you said, these guys are only early 20s, and they're getting given one of the most important roles in a Wallabies lineup.
Yeah, it probably just got given to him too early, too easily. He hadn't put the years behind him like so many other players in the past have. You think of someone like a Jono Lance. He didn't even play for the Wallabies. He came very close a couple of times on end-of-season spring tours.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
He played an Australian Barbarian in his game as well, but he didn't play for the Wallabies. Two-time Super Rugby winner, who was really, really capable at 10 and 15, and at the moment probably would have walked into that Wallabies side. Whereas you compare that to some of the guys coming through now, and they've only had 2-3 years behind them. They've played 15, 20 caps, and there's almost an expectation that, hey, we're a Wallaby, but really, there's a difference between, as Richie McCaw said back in the day, if you want to be an All Black or want to be an All Blacks, great. And he always said he wanted to be an All Blacks, great. And I think there's got to be that mentality across the board that from Australia's players that they need to, you know, being mediocre, being able to get three wins out of three matches for your Super Rugby provinces or two out of four, it's just not good enough. And we'll see, I think, a bit more of an expectation. That consistency is paramount. Consistency is king under Joe Schmidt. And that's what I think he'll be looking for this year.
Yeah. And as you said, we need consistency, and we need someone who can step up. And we've seen this year, in regards to Australian teams and New Zealand teams, Australian teams have stepped up. The Reds themselves have got the three wins over Kiwi rivals. The Brumbies haven't done as well as what we would have predicted, but they did get that big win over the Canes a few weeks ago. The Waratahs have come close, not quite, but they've got those two big wins over the Crusaders. Any other year, and you'd look at a Waratahs team winning two games over the Crusaders, is just amazing. Like, you'd be like coming home with that. That's the highlight of your year, realistically. It's just, unfortunately, everything else hasn't quite gone their way. But we've seen some wins over these New Zealand teams, and we've got three teams in the top eight. Is the gap between Australian rugby and New Zealand rugby closing, or is it a bit of a false dawn like we've seen previously?
Oh, I think it's a false dawn. I said to Brucey a couple of weeks ago before he elevated us to the other side of the world that I thought we would find out a bit more over the next couple of weeks, and we've seen that. We've seen that there's one or two teams in Australia that can be competitive, but the others still aren't, and they're still not there consistently. So until that happens, I think you need three. Three to me is the magic number. If you've got five teams or four teams, you need three being really competitive. And if you've only got one to two, that's not good enough, because it just means that there's teams that aren't winning nearly enough. And that ultimately hurts when you put those sides, you make up a Wallabies team, because they're just not used to winning. They're not used to being able to close out games or winning those crunch defining moments. So I don't think it's closed necessarily. It's certainly helped by the fact that there's been so many players leave New Zealand rugby over the last 12 to 24 months. particularly those from the Crusaders, but also the Chiefs and the Blues have lost a truckload of players in key crucial positions. So, yeah, there's been some progress in terms of the wins on the board, but overall, you've still actually got to question whether or not that gap is closed. And also, you look at some of the players leaving, and there's quite a few of them that are leaving at the end of this season. And that means that it's so difficult to be able to build on the little bit of progress that's occurring, because you almost go a step forward and then take that step backwards. So, yeah, until they can find a solution where you can get three competitive teams, whether or not that's with four or five sides, I just don't think Australian rugby is going to be able to get to the top where they need to.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like you said, wins on the board aren't necessarily the whole story. If we look at it, the Crusaders are not the team that we've seen in the last 7 years. It's just the Highlanders. The Highlanders aren't a particularly exciting side at the moment. Things like that. But I guess if we look forward to this weekend, one of the biggest games that we really have to touch on is this Blues Hurricanes lineup on Saturday night in Auckland. We've seen it before earlier in the season. The Canes got out on top. There was no Geordie Barrett that time, but there was Cam Roygaard. So does this change? Is there, the Hurricanes have lost one game. The Blues are going in there. They've just had a massive win. Who do we see come out on top? It's in Auckland. It's Eden Park. That's the Blues love to play at home. But given what we've seen from the Hurricanes, I just think it might be, you know, the Canes are very impressive this year. They're the ones for the title, realistically.
Well, they're at the top of the table, aren't they? Oh, look, there's 1 point between them. They're both 9 from 10. It's an afternoon fixture. That's probably a really crucial factor to point out, because the finals aren't going to be played in afternoon footy. They're not going to be 2:30 kickoffs. They'll be more likely 7:30 kickoffs. So that means that the conditions will be completely different come knockout footy. Eden Park, it's a fortress. I like what the Blues can do. They're the ones that can match the Hurricanes, and they don't have Asafa Amua. That's a really big one for them to be without. I thought that the Blues experimented with their game plan a bit in that first half against the Rebels, and then they decided to be more direct in the second half. I reckon they'll win it. I'm going to go for the Blues this week. TJ Perenara is playing some really good footy at the moment. Came off the bench, did a good job, scored another try. 63 tries he's now got. Super Rugby leading try scorer of all time. But yeah, Blues, but it'll be an awesome game. Afternoon footy. Hopefully the conditions are nice so that they can play a bit.
Yeah, let's hope they're a lot nicer than what is expected to come through in Sydney this weekend. So everyone heading out to Allianz Stadium, make sure to bring your rain jacket. It's going to flood. But as we wrap up the Super Rugby, we should definitely touch on the Sevens like we did earlier. The Aussie sides did compete well in Singapore. The Australian women unfortunately went down to the Black Ferns in the final. And as we said earlier, the men finished fourth. In a bit of a blowout loss to Great Britain. But when you look at the squad, if we go to the Aussie women, we're about, 6 weeks out from the Olympics. They haven't won a gold medal for, I should prerequisite that, they haven't won one of the Sevens tournament leg tournaments in a few legs now. They opened the season with two golds, and they were looking pretty red hot. The Black Ferns weren't quite on it. They've brought in a lot of their star players have come back from injury, just having a break and things like that. Heading into this weekend, the women were without Demi Hayes, Bianca Rita, Charlotte Kaslik was a big one, and Shani Smal was also out. So you've got some big names missing out.
And Alicia as well.
Yeah. And so they were relying on a lot of young girls, likes of, I have to do a shout out, my teammate Ruby Nicholson, who made her debut a tournament earlier, but she came in, Lily Dix come in. There's a lot of young girls who were given the chance, and Dom Dutoit, not young, but coming back from an ankle injury. It was always going to be a tough tournament for this team to see them get through to the final. And as you mentioned earlier, to really be in the mix, 12-10 at halftime. Or was it 12-10? 14-10 at halftime. 14-12 at halftime. It was an impressive performance. I think it just goes to show that we've got a lot of depth in that women's sevens department. One thing, though, that will have a lot of people worried is that Maddie Ashby went down with a knee injury in that final. So we're 6 weeks out from an Olympics. Potential that she's scrubbed out altogether. What for you do you make of, you know, heading into an Olympic Games?
Well, it's about 6 weeks before that selection's done, I think it is. So, the Olympics is still at the end of July. So even if she's got and she'll be having scans, I messaged Tim Walsh just yesterday, so on Monday, asking whether or not there was any update. And so there won't be an update for a couple of days, I wouldn't imagine. But, yeah, she's a really important figure in this Aussie side, and it allows them to be able to rotate Charlotte Kaslik a little bit as well to keep bodies fresh, but also just that double punch when they're both on there. Both of them have got boys, they've got time up their sleeves, generally speaking, and they've got that creative attacking prowess. She's a massive one, both sides of the ball. We know that she's had a couple of red cards throughout the season, but when she's on the field and she's got a discipline right, she's an amazing player. So really quick, deceptively quick. So fingers crossed for her. The other one that I'll highlight, Isabella Nasser. She's just really come on. She always threatens to be a player of potential, but we're seeing that consistency now on both sides of the ball. Probably the best, one of the best at the breakdown there for Australia. And she scored against New Zealand, I think the second try after Maddie Levi continued her rich try scoring vein. So, yeah, some really positive signs for Tim Walsh to be able to test that depth. Another loss to New Zealand. They were missing Sherelle Kaka, Tyler King as well. Both of them picking up injuries throughout the tournament. No Sarah Hirani. I'm not sure if she'll be back in time for the Olympics. Brazier, I'm not sure if she was there either. I don't think she was. So, both sides missing a few, both sides once again showing that they are very much the gold medal favourites. And New Zealand has that ascendancy at the moment, but you can't write off the Aussie women's side. They're clearly one of the world leaders, but they're also one of the leaders in Australian women's sport right across the board. So that's really positive.
Yeah, and sevens is a short, sharp tournament, and it's one of those things where you can go in with all the form. You could have won every tournament leading into this Olympic Games, but it just takes that one split second moment and it's all changed. Like we saw that in their opening match, was it Brazil that they were playing, and just how tough that game was. It took them until the last few minutes to really make that game their own. They were put under the pump from the opening minute. And you go into a game like that and you're thinking, oh, Brazil, like, okay, that's a win. You put that on the board easily. But sevens is a game that you can't go into any game thinking it's a win.
Yeah, well, Brazil's been like once upon a time, you'd be thinking 40-50 most games, but they've really stepped up their game. And that's off the back of physicality. The one thing that concerns me about the Aussie sevens at the moment is when they try to play with too much width and depth inside the 22, and they end up being caught well behind the gate line. And then it's like they don't have that option B, which is to go through the middle, keep the ball much tighter. That's something that I think they desperately need to consider. And there was a nice option by Tegan Levi when she decided to kick the ball. It made 50 meters, put the pressure on. The ball just went out in time, but they're going to have to start thinking about when they get trapped rather than panicking and being caught behind the game line. How do they figure themselves out? Because if I'm in opposition, I'm kicking long, I'm making contestable kicks, or I'm kicking long to really challenge Australia's skill set under pressure. So, yeah, good signs, good sides from the men as well. It's quickly coming to the Olympics.
Yeah, well, like you said, I think that's a Shani smile. Like when you're missing a big body like Shani in the middle, that would be your go-to to run it up, take it up through the middle, make that hit, and then take it wide. But we saw in that game against the Black Ferns, they were caught in that 22. way too often. And like you said, they just had no other option. They were pushed back and they just lack that. It's been something over the last few years, really, that they've just lacked that physicality to take it up. But as you mentioned, the Australian men also doing some pretty good stuff. Michael Hooper, we have to do a shout out to him, scoring his first sevens try. I think he said he flopped over the line very well. So impressive from him. I don't know what your thoughts are in regards to an Olympics. Does he make an Olympic team? Have you seen enough of him?
Oh, I don't think I have, but there's still a couple of months, so he'll be able to get that fitness and the speed, the acceleration a bit more in his legs. It's just a massive shift, but yeah, he still needs a bit to go, but what else he brings around that environment, you can't be underestimated either.
Mm. And so the Black Ferns ended up taking out the title for the regular season in the women. So Australian women finished 2 points behind. It was nail-biter in the end. The men have finished fifth or sixth, I believe. I'll have to look that one up, but they are in the top eight, which takes them through to the final tournament, which is Madrid. And so that will be coming up in the next few weeks. But I mean, positive signs for them heading into an Olympics. And you'd suspect at least a medal from one of these teams coming home from Paris.
Yeah, you'd hope so. Yeah, particularly the women. But unless stage fright catches up with them, but I think they're in a much stronger position than they were in Tokyo. And the men themselves have been much more consistent too. Some important wins against South Africa in quarterfinals that's allowed them to make it through to those last four games where with a medal hope. Good signs. They probably need a bit more attacking threats out wide. We know that Argentina weren't the same team without Marcus Mineta, and that's the same thing for Australia. When you don't have a Corey Tour or a Darby Lancaster, it does start to show, because speed is paramount when it comes to sevens.
Yes, and we should turn to this weekend. We would be remiss if we didn't mention it's a doubleheader in Sydney. Wallaroos are taking on Canada in their opening Pac-4 tournament. We touched on it last week, the Wallaroos squad, but it's a big game for them this week. It's the first under their new coach, Joe Yap. There's been a bit of chop and change within the squad, and it's the Pacific Four series. If you're not too across that, they need at least one win against either Canada, USA, or the Black Ferns to cement a spot in WXV1 later this year. Canada are going to be a really tough task. They are a top four team in the world rugby rankings, and the Wallaroos haven't quite got over them in the last few years. So this will be a stern test, but it's something that I think a lot of Australian rugby fans should be on the lookout for come this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a good opportunity to go out, watch that game, international rugby, and then you follow it up with a local derby with the Waratahs and the Brumbies. So it's an awesome opportunity to get out there to Sydney Football Stadium. Hopefully the weather's all right, but if it's not, there's plenty of spots undercover where you can have a couple of drinks and enjoy that. So yeah, do get around it. And good to see the Wallaroos spreading the love of rugby, some clinics out. I think they're training out in Blacktown at the moment before moving over to the eastern suburbs later this week. So it's really great that that's happening, and seeing them in the national kits, which once upon a time didn't occur. Really good signs. Nice bit of footage coming out of the Wallaroos camp with Joe Yap speaking too. So yeah, good signs.
Yes, and if too much rugby is never enough, we've also got the Junior Wallabies, who kicked off their rugby championship last week. They were soundly beaten by Argentina in the end in, again, torrential rain. Someone needs to talk to the rain gods right now. We need it to stop, please. And they will be playing again on Tuesday night. So they'll it's another one that people need to keep an eye on.
Yeah, Tuesday night and then Sunday up against the All Blacks. I think we might actually find Harry McLaughlin Phillips could be a real chance to play that one. Probably indicates that he might not feature this weekend against the Rebels, but that's an opportunity. A 19-year-old, just turned 20 actually, might have, but a good player. They need a bit more class. There was a really good crop of backs that came through last year, perhaps not that same pedigree. In 2024, we know that Massimo Deludis played a really big role, John Bryant as well last year. Tom Hooper's younger brother as well. So who are these emerging stars? We'll probably kind of find out a little bit more over the next week.
Great. Well, that's all from us this week. And I think that might be it for me as well. Sam Bruce is meant to be scheduled to come
back.
You'll
be back.
I know. I'll have to come back again. I'm sure the fans miss listening to me. But it's been great to join you once again, Christy, even if it was just for a two-week stint. Sam Bruce should be back for all the listeners come next week. But it's been great to talk all things rugby, given that Super Rugby, Wallaroos, the Sevens, we've touched on pretty much everything you could touch on when it comes to rugby. So it's been great. Thank you again, Christy, and we'll see you again soon.
Short but sweet, always good fun, and look forward to seeing your friendly face probably next week, I reckon. I reckon there'll be a cameo talking Wallaroos off the back of their Canada game. So anyway, good fun. Look forward to it. Thanks.